I want to welcome everybody to session 4 of Robert's An Introduction to Self-Compassion.
Well, welcome to everybody again for our 4th class. I would begin by just reflecting on, just in the present moment, just hearing Mary say the title of the class, An Introduction to Self-Compassion. It just stimulates in me a part of this reality of an introduction to self-compassion is it occurs to me that every time that I approach myself, it's like an introduction to self-compassion. It also occurs to me that maybe a more apt description of this course is just simply self-compassion, because I think that whenever I approach myself in my inner world, it's always new. It's always an introduction. So I just wanted to share that opening, sort of an insight for me before we start. And I would love to begin with a short opening meditation. So I'd ask that everyone, if you're willing, just to bring your awareness and your attention to your inner life, to the felt sense in your inner experience. Allow yourself in a sort of compassionate witnessing to be with whatever you're feeling, whatever you're thinking. Simply be with it and allow it. Feel your breath moving in and out in the rhythm of your breath as it naturally moves in and out. Notice in your body just what you feel, the sensations and the emotions, watching it. Is there any warmth? Is there a flow? Is there any tightness or holding? Is there been an absence of something that's even hard to feel, difficult to feel, because it may not be as accessible? Notice if there is some aspect, either slight or even strong, of a heart movement, of a longing, a yearning, a deep, deep desiring or wishing for whatever in your life. An enhanced well-being, an enhanced aliveness, or any other form of a deep longing. Be with that to whatever extent feeling it right now. Your attention coming to your inner life, the inner felt sense. Notice that it flows. It moves, that there's always a movement. Following your breath, sense and feel if this is connecting to you, that everything that we feel, that we experience, takes all the different forms. It takes the form of physical sensations, energetic flow, all the emotional feelings, thoughts, the stories, all of it. See if you can sense into the subtle current that runs through all of it is just life. Subtle feeling, energy that moves through all of the different forms of your inner experiencing. And even the outer experiencing, if we can call it that, of your hearing, your vision, taste, smells, all forms that is given to life itself. Life itself moving in and through us. longing for, moving for some kind of fulfillment, well-being, expression, creativity, aliveness. I'm going to read something now, asking you to simply just receive and be open to this reading by Rainer Maria Rilke, German poet. Let everything happen. God speaks to each of us as he makes us, then walks with us silently out of the night. These are the words we dimly hear. You, sent out beyond your recall, go to the limits of your longing. Embody me. Flare up like flame and make big shadows I can move in. Let everything happen to you, beauty and terror. Just keep going. No feeling is final. Don't let yourself lose me. Nearby is the country they call life. You will know it by its seriousness. Give me your hand. A few moments of silence just to take that in and what I'd like to do for this session is I'd like to spend a few moments receiving, hearing any kind of either questions, need for clarification about the practice that I suggested from the last class, any feedback from the self-compassion exercise that I suggested that you engage in. And I'd like to spend a little bit of time with that and see if anybody has any questions, any sharing of that experience, need for clarification, or any other form of support. I'd really like to hear it.
I was just going to say that I think because of what I'm learning from you about this energy of life coming through everything and even my reactions, I was able to enjoy and appreciate something good about my reaction to Rilke's The God Language that still continues to be an obstruction sometimes to my receiving a message that may be very important. But I was able to see that reaction is a part of my twisting and knotting of that energy, but it's that energy coming through. I'm unable to appreciate the use of the God language, but I'm able to appreciate my own energy and that life that's hard for me to label God as coming through. So thank you for that.
Thank you for sharing that. I was going to predict that there would be at least one person who would react to the word God, as it's not uncommon that in any given group, if that word or divine or something like that is used, that there's almost always at least one person who reacts to it. And so I appreciate your sharing, because I like that you can come to the experience of the reaction and sense that there is, as I heard you say, some life quality, even if it is a reaction. Not necessarily asking for a response from you right now, but for you and for the other listeners, whenever there's a reaction like that, that any reaction fundamentally from the perspective of the life energy is the life in you reaching for something that your mind perceives is not present. I don't know if that makes sense to you, but if your mind says, I don't like God, or some version of that, the word God doesn't connect you with what's real for you, etc., then it's the life in you that is speaking and saying to in some form that what's true for you, your inner reality, your inner life, wanting something, wanting to be acknowledged or something like that. So every reaction is actually an expression of life's longing or life's reaching for life. So that perspective for me is also important to take in. So I will go back to my request. If there, I'd love to hear, in support of you all in experiencing the value of the practice of self-compassion, any feedback, questions, sharing, needs for clarification, any other form of support in the self-compassion practice that I suggested from the last class.
I do have a fairly profound reaction to the exercise. When I move to the beautiful need or the living impulse, I feel like I get a shift in consciousness, is the best way I can say it. It's almost as though my mind becomes different, or my consciousness moves into another realm that's so much more spacious. It's not so much about this and that and the problem that, or the need that isn't filled or it is filled. It's a whole nother dimension. And it's pretty spacious and it's quite nice. And I'm wondering if that is, I assume that that's kind of familiar, that I'm doing something right there. Or
yeah, actually I have, as you're saying it, I'm feeling some inner excitement hearing that, because it very strongly resonates with my experience of this dimension of the life impulse. Absolutely coincides with it. It's hard to put words on it, so the only thing we can do is to express it, and to, you know, that I could do is help support, lead people into the experience. When you have the experience itself, then that informs you more than any words. Your description of it, for me, coincides beautifully with my own experience. It's definitely a shift in consciousness.
Yeah, good. I'm glad I shared it. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
I had a big upset going on, I think, the night of our last class. And I was sort of in the midst of it and having a very familiar, upsetting experience, feeling overwhelmed and frightened. And suddenly I thought, oh, wait, I'm telling a story. I started asking myself, what's the story? And the story is, you shouldn't have done it, you should know better, you always do this, you're going to be punished. And then I was like, oh, okay. Able to, you know, in a sort of baby step, use the tools to take a little step back and say, okay, so that's not, quote, reality. That's the story I'm telling. It's not that it doesn't matter. And there's something important in this. For me, the thing that is compelling is that there's precious life in this sort of broken feeling of not good enough feeling. And the thing that I also wanted to mention is that I think it was the next day, I was just out and about, was having these little joyful feelings. And I went to visit someone in the hospital, and I stopped to get some flowers, and I stopped to get some food. And I was having these waves of appreciation that were not mental, of, oh my goodness, here I am, all this food is being presented to me, I didn't lift a finger, all I have to do is give them some money, and then I get this food, and I sort of almost felt giddy, that's too strong. It was just this little delightful relief and appreciation, but the thing is, I didn't have to think my way into it, it was just sort of there. It was a sort of a skating feeling or floating on something. And this is new. I want to also say I think I'm having some results. And
yeah, it's
so
wonderful. I'm so happy to hear that. That's, again, very similar to sharing before. That is so consistent with this practice as I've experienced. What I hear you share is a kind of a spontaneous feeling of that appreciation, that aliveness. It just occurs, and it didn't take place through the thinking mind. It just takes place through perhaps what could be called basic life channels, direct, spontaneous, and alive. So I'm delighted to hear your sharing. Thank you. Okay, thank you for those of you who responded. And again, on an ongoing basis, I'm really wanting you, suggesting that there is an ongoing the practice of this self-compassion exercise or process. What I'd like to do is share the topic of what I'd like, a short talk, and it has to do with, since the theme for this week is the protective and defensive structures having to do with these core limiting beliefs and many different ways that this aspect of us can be described. I want to go a little bit more into a particular aspect of this part of our structure when we are living from this place, when we're living from protective and defensive structures or ways of being. One of the primary ways that this manifests in our life is as a persona or a mask, or how we present ourselves to others. There's many different aspects of this, but one of the things that I want to highlight is that essentially when we are operating from the persona or mask, one way to describe it is we want to look good. We want to be acceptable. We often want to present ourselves as a certain way so that we are liked, so that we're accepted, so that there's a kind of an approval, almost an externally based validation. That's one of the ways to describe when we're operating from this persona. When I say we want to look good, I think when this part of us is active, we want to look nice, responsible. We want to be seen as together, mature, spiritual. There's nothing life-limiting in those qualities in and of themselves, but what limits us is that when we are presenting ourselves in this way, and I think we present ourselves from varying degrees of consciously or unconscious and automatically presenting ourselves this way, we actually prevent a kind of authenticity and deeper vulnerability when we're presenting ourselves from this persona. And it's actually protecting something that's very precious. We want, you know, there's a genuine need for acceptance. There's a genuine need to be seen as we are. But sometimes when we're acting from our persona, there's either an unconscious or conscious level of fear that we won't be accepted, that we won't be liked, that we won't be supported or be seen and accepted in the way that we want to be. So we have these habitual personas. And to the extent that we're identified, we actually live in and from them. And many times we're not even able to identify or to recognize that this aspect of us, that we're operating in and through it in our day-to-day life. Let me just pause there. I want to see if there's any need for clarification, questions about that. It's just the basic concept, a primary aspect of this, our protective and defensive structures that I wanted to shed light on.
So Robert, this feels like a really big piece for me, and I just wanted to see if I got it. I heard you say that when we have a longing to be accepted, along with that, there's an underlying fear that we won't be. And it seems that then energetically we would not be received with the kind of ease and spaciousness that we're longing for, because that fear would actually create some kind of resistance in the other. Is that true?
I think that what you're saying is true. That fits my experience, in other words.
Because that's been my experience.
Yeah.
And this piece just kind of seemed to shed this really big aha on it.
Yeah, yeah. I hear you sharing part of more of the energetic conveyance, that you're feeling fear, and energetically you convey that in whatever you do, through your words, through your nonverbal presence. And the part of it that I'm bringing attention to is the persona part of that, is what you present that's behind the fear. Maybe you're angry. Maybe you're feeling something that your mind would regard as unpleasant and will not be accepted. So instead of presenting your authenticity in a vulnerable way, you present something else, a front, you know, sort of being clear and responsible, so to speak. So that's the part of it that I'm bringing attention to here.
So then if we're not in touch with the feeling that's going on, whether it be the fear or this upset or anger or some anxiety, then the persona that is expressed outwardly is a mask for something, so it's hard to be authentic and for people to see us in the way that we really want to be seen.
Yes. For me, there's understandable reasons why that is so. We may not always be interacting with someone with whom we have developed trust. whom we are trusting that if we do express our authenticity, that they will meet us and receive us and empathically and really connect with us without judging us. So there's some really understandable reasons why that occurs. And yet bringing attention to this, I think, has been very important for me and those I've shared this with around if we value authenticity, want to be authentic to ourselves first and then the other, then it requires that we become aware of these personas that we present. Now, I want you to hear that I'm not judging it. I'm not saying we shouldn't have personas, because that's just another form of resisting it. But just that we can bring a clear and honest awareness of when we present ourselves and we want to look good, we want to be acceptable, we want to look whatever, fill in the blank, mature, spiritual, we don't want to be judged, then what we present instead of that that isn't authentic, for me it's important to be able to be self-honest and take a look at that. And then to approach ourselves with even that aspect of us, to approach that part with compassion. Know that we're protecting something that we're really longing for, a deeply respectful and honoring with ourselves. So I'm wondering if that seemed...
That totally helped on many, many levels. It's just taking me to a much deeper place of not only noticing the persona and why it may be manifesting because of some discomfort with a particular person or a situation, but also even in that, just in the noticing, to have compassion for that and just to hold that space of, I get it. I get that this is uncomfortable for you. So thank you. Yes, totally met my needs.
And I think this manifests in many different ways. I think particularly those, and I'm imagining that everybody in this class falls under this category, is that you've been engaging in life activities where you hold high value for inclusiveness, honoring of life, respect, empathy, compassion towards other people. So these qualities are life-serving, they're life-enhancing. And when you find yourself not in that, perhaps in a reaction, a jackal reaction, finding yourself judging or angry, often the persona part of us can come into play with that. We're not even allowing ourselves to be fully aware of our authenticity. For example, I noticed this was active in me even just yesterday as someone that I care about was sharing with me something in their partner, and they're going through a divorce and custody. And from what this person said about their partner, my mind was enraged. I started feeling enraged. I started in my judging mind. I noticed how the thoughts were coming into me that I was evaluating as, well, this is just malicious. This is cruel. This person is psychopathic, sociopathic, they're narcissistic, they don't care about anybody for themselves. And so I noticed that this part of me that is judging that is like, I don't want to see someone as malicious, that's judging. I'm judging them and that's wrong. And so if I'm acting from the persona, first I'm doing it with regard to myself. Am I being honest with myself? Am I able to go penetrate into the energy, the feelings, and what I'm longing for in the experience of malicious behavior when I judge someone as that? And I be honest with myself and say, yes, that is my experience now. It is couched in judgments. And can I be honest with myself enough to allow myself to not even have the mask with regard to myself? And then if I'm able to, then it leaves an inner opening for me to connect to what I'm feeling underneath that and what I'm deeply valuing in myself and in other people. So underneath the label malicious, there's such strong desire and longing to be in a world where people are respectful and caring, considerate of each other, even if it's challenging. So when I reach that energy, there's something in me that relaxes. It still doesn't mean that I don't feel passionate about the behavior that I'm aware of in the other person. And so with respect to other people, if I carry that persona and don't acknowledge the energy behind it, then I'm not being authentic in my own assessment. So I'm going to pause there, and I notice that you have your hand up. Would you like to respond to or ask a question?
I keep getting distracted by the fact that actually I think my persona is almost the reverse of the one that you described,
yeah,
in that I am so sure that I am not going to be accepted that I force the rejection.
Yeah.
I can do it with humor. I can do it in a variety of ways. I have been able to get in touch with the deep longing for warm, protective, loving acceptance. And it is making it even clearer that I'm so afraid I'm not going to get it, I'm so sure I'm not going to get it, that I make certain that I don't.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. Again, I appreciate it, because that would be another form of how it manifests. So it can manifest as trying to be nice and considerate and putting that front up, or the other form that you described as pushing it away because you are convinced you're not going to experience the warmth and acceptance. Both of those forms still are kind of a mask or front in a way, because it doesn't express the authentic experience that you have. And I'm not sure how that expression would take place, but again, I appreciate your sharing that. And I think even as I'm speaking, as people are listening, what I'm hoping to do in the exercise, I'm going to do another short exercise in pairs. There's so many different ways that each individual can experience and does experience what I'm calling this persona or mask, or that which we present instead of our authenticity. Is that complete for you?
It is. I'm eager to get in touch with what it is that precedes the negative behavior.
Yeah, I'm hoping that the exercise might bring that out. I'm not sure it will. But one of the things I'd like you to do is, as part of this, is what you're calling negative behavior, the pushing it away, is just to bring light to it. Examine it, look at it, invite it. And I think just doing that over time is going to bring a certain quality of awareness that I think can be helpful.
Okay, thank you.
So I notice that you have your hand up.
If we could go back for a moment to when you were saying, when you're hearing someone expressing and you're having a reaction that's malicious, I think you were saying if you carry that persona of not expressing that, then you're not authentic in that moment. Did I understand that correctly?
Well, not exactly. It's a matter of when you say not expressing that. First, it has to do with, before I express it, I want to acknowledge it to myself. I want to be in touch with my own authenticity. Instead of pretending that I'm not feeling the feelings that are underneath what I'm characterizing, what, you know, the words that I use, like malicious behavior, then I'm not being authentic to myself first. And then I want to be authentic to myself so that I can be authentic with the other person.
So in this case, what might that sound like? You're first acknowledging to yourself, as I think you said, okay, malicious, okay, the need I have is for the world to be more gentle and accepting. And so then that would help you. And then might you actually say what you were going through to the other person, or?
First of all, the other person wasn't present. There was somebody that I cared about who was talking about his experience with this other person. I didn't have the availability of the other person to express myself.
So the malicious was toward the person not in the room.
Right. That was the word I was using to judge that other person who wasn't in the room. The person who wasn't in the room was conveying their experience of interactions with this other person. So I'm wondering did you still have that question?
Well, I do in a way. I mean,
yeah,
that example doesn't quite fit, but I can imagine a situation where I'm having that reaction to someone who is sitting in front of me.
Yeah, yeah. And so I want to emphasize over and over again that for me, the first question is not what I say, not what my expression is, but the first question is, how am I connected to myself? about that. So I want to be able to connect with the actual life energy that's inherent in that expression and experience of malicious behavior, cruel. There's some authentic life energy within that. So I don't want to deny that and judge and say, oh, I shouldn't be malicious. So I go into the energy and I feel this intense feeling that my mind, I can say is, I'm outraged, I'm angry, how can this be? But then I want to stay with that. And then when I go into that feeling of outrage and anger, and how can this be, then I feel this intense pain, the deep heartbrokenness of the care that I have for the person who is on the receiving end of that behavior. How much I care for this person and their own pain. And I start to feel a kind of warmth and compassion and brokenheartedness. I become more vulnerable to myself. Then I'm ready to express myself. I'm hesitant. I'm not creating a rule for myself or other people as I share this, but I'm hesitant to express myself before I connect to that level of deep authenticity and vulnerability. My experience is that it does not tend to serve life, either me, the relationship, or the other person. Is that helpful?
Yes, that was very helpful. And I'm guessing that could take a little while.
Yes, it's an ongoing practice for me. Take a little while in each individual instance, and a little while over time in life itself. So is that complete for you?
Very helpful. Thank you.
Okay. There is a hand.
This is a follow-up to what you were talking about. I am curious, Robert, about possibly the next step. If we did choose to express ourselves in that moment, would you be willing to say some words about how you might have expressed yourself by taking that next step? It would help me to hear how it might sound when I am at that connected place with the person in front of me and I'm feeling the brokenheartedness around the situation.
Your question has deeper implications for what might be called as the more fullness or the complexity of this kind of an interaction. So my first response to that, I'm thinking that what you mean is the person who wasn't in the room at the time. The person who had the behavior that I was labeling as malicious and cruel. Are you talking about that person or the other person who was at the receiving end of that behavior?
I'm talking about the person at the receiving end. How an expression might sound coming out of you to the person who's in front of you.
Yeah, so the person who was at the receiving end of that kind of behavior.
Yes.
Well, again, my first response generally would be not to express myself, but to be present and empathizing with that person in their pain, in the deep unmet longings that they have in that experience. I would want to fully connect with them as much as I'm able to first. But I may empathize. I'm sensing how deeply painful this was for you and how you opened yourself up for trust and experienced this, and then I would describe the behavior instead, how much you were in hoping to finally have some kind of trust in this relationship. I'm sensing how brokenhearted you are in this. I would empathize first.
So in this example, the inner work brings you to compassion and connection with the person you're with.
And I want to emphasize, I'm going to say it and emphasize it again and again, I think, that I'm not as comfortable answering the question of how would I express myself, because what more deeply resonates in me is the cultivation of the inner work, the inner life, is so much more important than how I express myself. It's not that the expression isn't important, but it's founded on the inner connection. I want to have that deep clarity and exploration and fullness of that before I even think about how I'm going to express myself. And then my expression follows in a way that comes easily, that I can more deeply trust. I don't have to figure out what I'm going to say because I have the inner connection with myself when my heart is open.
Okay, That clarifies it for me. Thank you.
Okay. What I'd like to do now is to begin to move into a practice that I'm going to suggest for everyone to engage in pairs with this. What I want to do is describe the practice. I think it's a fairly short, I want to keep it short and simple for all of you. So I want to demonstrate this with someone first, because I want you all to be clear on what I'm asking you to do. So I'm going to go over the two or three steps with this. And if you hear me working with someone, then I think it might be more clear what I'm asking you to do. In pairs, and as I'm speaking, if you'd be willing to volunteer for a short, me working with you for a few minutes, I'd appreciate it. So in pairs, what I'd like each of you to do is you start with this focus on how we present ourselves with the persona, the less than authentic presentation, to identify one aspect of that in your own experience. Just identify it and just share, say it or describe it out loud, how you operate from that persona, and just sort of in general, your life. And that doesn't mean that every single instance, but in general, how this persona is something that you operate from. And then the next one is, can you find a specific instance of that experience? Share an experience recently or something that's alive wherein this was active. And then the next part of it is I'd like you all to bring an open, spacious awareness to that inner felt sense, to simply be with this persona, the energy of it, then to sense underlying feelings, the underlying longings in this, and to simply to be with it and to share that experience. I'll repeat those again and then ask, see if there's anybody who'd be willing to spend a few minutes for me to sort of guide and be with you in this exercise. Identify, say it out loud, this aspect of how you operate from your persona. Number two, find a specific instance of that experience of that and share that with the other person. And then bring a compassionate awareness to this inner felt sense, the experience of this, and then be with that. I see a hand up. Are you volunteering?
Yes, if it's possible.
Yes, it is possible. Wonderful. So let me start with the first part. You identify or describe just how you operate from this aspect of your persona. Just you describe it first.
I think that when I'm operating from that mask, I am silent. Yes.
So there could be something going on, some interaction, some relationship interaction, and then when this comes up, you're silent.
Yes.
And you present your silence instead of speaking something that's more authentic or true for you.
Yes.
Can you find a specific experience where this happened and this is still alive in you?
Yes, it's quite recent.
Could you describe that experience just briefly?
Today at my workplace, my colleagues start to speaking and blaming other colleagues and my boss, and I didn't like it. And I was silent, but inside I was angry and sad.
So you're already in the third part of it, is you're bringing an awareness to the inner felt sense of what's behind the silence. And notice the silence is something that you present. You're communicating silence where there's something other than that going on, something that you're really feeling, what I call your authenticity. Take a few moments simply to be with the felt sense of that anger and the sadness. Just allow it, breathe, be with that experience by itself. You have a sense of connectedness to it. Can you share with me what you're experiencing?
I feel sad and a sense of wanting to be supported in this path of harmony with people, of trying other ways to express things. I would like those people would have expressed it another way.
So let me see if I can connect with what you're saying, the sense of behind the anger there's more sadness. You long to be in relationships where there is harmony, where people express themselves perhaps with more authentic, non-judging, more respectful ways, more honoring. That is such a high and strong value for you that when you don't experience it, like in this instance, it triggers the pain, the sadness.
Yes. And I wanted also support because me too, I do express often blaming people and I would like to receive help and not other blaming.
So you want support also. So when you find yourself in this mode of blaming or criticizing other people, in those moments, you want the support of perhaps expressing yourself in ways that are more in harmony with your valuing. You don't value the blaming and you don't like it when you're critical or blaming. You want to be perhaps acting in ways that are more respectful and considerate. That would be very supportive of you if somebody communicated to you with that kind of support. How are you feeling right now? There with what's alive in you.
Understood.
So I want you to just know, I'm glad for this demonstration because I think it adds another step to the process, is that can you go back and connect to the silence that you presented as your persona? Then with whatever memory of that, the silence that you presented instead of saying anything, can you connect to the deeper needs and the longings for more support, for the way that you want to be and communicate with people respectfully, more consideration? Can you connect to that energy?
I'm trying.
You're trying?
Yes.
What comes up?
Longing.
Longing.
Something that lacks, and I wanted to connect. Yeah. I want to remember in the past, some situation in which I felt good about this.
Remember some past experience in which your needs and your valuing around support and respectful communication.
Yes.
If you connect that energetic quality, that feeling, then somehow that will bring more life, more fullness to your experience. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
So I'm going to just stop here for the short demonstration. Is that okay with you?
Yes, it's okay for me. I want to thank you.
Okay, thank you. Before we move on to the parrot exercise, again, I'm going to review the steps. Number one, person A, let's say the first person in the pair, identify, say aloud, or describe how you operate from your persona. It could be just one experience or one aspect of it. And then share a specific instance of when you did this, when this part of your persona was active. And then the third part is to bring an open, empathic awareness to this inner felt sense. Be with it. Sense the inner longings behind it. Share that with your partner. Allow whatever else is there, even if it isn't within the framework of these three questions, just allow whatever's there to arise. So, I'm ready to begin the pairs. So, thank you all for that exercise in your pair. What I'd like to do is spend a little bit of time hearing some feedback and some sharing, some questions, what came out of that process for you, that hopefully my response will be supportive of you and helpful to other people as well. So anybody have anything they'd like to share firsthand? I'd love to hear what you have to share.
I found that really supportive, and when I got to trying to find the need underneath, I found when I tried to process on my own or connect to that, I was struggling. It's still coming from a kind of forced place, trying to find what I would love. And I got support from my partner, and when they were able to guess for me I was able to receive it more and to really hear what that was. And this is a question I have, is that when I'm working on my own, because nearly all my life I have experienced needs as trying to get them met externally. So when I start to connect with something like a need for connection, it comes in and dismisses that as not possible in the world. And I really struggled to be in the beauty of that. And I wonder if there's anything you could... I find that happens with every need.
I'd like to understand a little bit more clearly by what you mean when you said that the need for connection and that you have a struggle or a difficulty with that. Say that again.
So when I think of the need for connection, because nearly my life everything comes from outside, so I imagine that need for connection being met with another person, and then I say to myself, that's just not possible in the world, because I've had not really many experiences, so I dismiss it.
Okay. So it sounds like what I'm interpreting as your mind tells you the story that it's not possible because you haven't had that experience.
Yeah. And I find that with nearly every single of the needs, I find it very hard to, if I try and move it away from the external world, then I haven't really got that much of a resource inside either.
Okay.
Well, so I get a bit despairing.
Yeah. Since the despairing part is probably coming from what I'm hearing as maybe hopelessness that those needs will ever be met.
Yeah. When I worked with my partner, it did support me, because when I heard it from him, when he said, say, a need for connection, I could allow myself to hear it from him. But when I'm trying to work on my own, it's a struggle.
Let's just take that for a moment and take a couple of minutes with you in this. When you heard this from your partner and just in this short exercise, you had experienced something.
Yeah.
Quality of connection.
It was actually to be fully received. That was my need, to be fully received or heard. And I went, yeah, and I felt a mourning around that, and I really could allow myself to connect with that.
So to be fully received. Now notice that did include another person. Your partner was present to you. But it also, the experience of being fully received was also an internal resonance, an internal fullness to your experience. My experience is that both of those are true. Both of them are present.
Yeah.
Simultaneously, there is one who is across from you, just figuratively. And whatever they do with you stimulates something that is in your heart's longing, what you deeply need. And then it's alive in your heart.
Yeah. So, but when I do it on my own, it doesn't seem to work.
And so the question is, I'm hearing in you, what can you do when you're on your own to bring a similar quality of aliveness and fullness? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
You know, there's probably a number of things I can say, but the thing that occurs to me immediately is when you have an experience like you just did with your partner, remember this experience. Feel it. Feel the fullness of it. So even a moment after you have this with him, you can do it alone. There's also other experiences in life when I'm thinking that you do have experiences of well-being and fulfillment, whether they include another person or they don't. Can you relate to that?
Yeah, I mean, I can. Just noticing how quickly the mind even starts to come in now, saying, well, it's not true, or he was nice that time we had that breakout, but maybe if I met him another time, he wouldn't be nice.
I'm glad you're identifying what I view as the utter pervasiveness of the thinking mind, how it comes in to authentic experience it and it tells stories around it, about it, that often disconnect from the deeper trust or the authenticity of what's actually true for you.
Then it's hard to trust. Then it starts to negate the experience I just had that felt really good and open.
So the practice is to be able to come over and over again to the authentic experience that you have and to be with that, because there is inherent trust in that itself, trust in the feeling and the energy itself. With ongoing practice, then we become aware of the thinking mind and how it alienates us from the fullness of our experience. You can notice it more.
I mean, I know there's a huge thing here for me, so I'll stop talking now to give some space for others, but thank you for the time to look at this.
Thank you. I see another hand. Do you have some sharing or question from this practice?
An interesting issue came up in my session with my partner and was helped because her process is slow and I tend to go fast. And one of the questions that came up was, I would imagine in a longer sort of beauty of needs session or experience, one would stay longer with the initial feelings that we might call the deficit feelings or the sadness. I don't even want to call them deficit feelings, but the sadness, or for me it was fear and things like that. That there was a way that I again went into the longings beneath that and did begin to feel a lot of very nice things, but it didn't necessarily connect back in to the place that was scared and do some sort of reparenting or rehealing or however we might call that. Do you get the drift of what I'm saying?
Yes, I do, and I'm appreciating your feedback because I would say I'm with you on that. This was a sort of a relatively short exercise that didn't go into the depths of what's implicit in the exercise,
right,
which stay with, for example, the fear or deeper sadness more.
And then there would be a natural transition point in a way where you would begin to feel that that had been empathized with and been with, and somehow there felt like an opening to begin or a moment where it felt right,
yes,
to move.
Yeah, because the felt right is the sort of the natural movement of the energy itself. When there's a particular openness and empathy with perhaps a feeling of fear or deep sadness, and then there is the natural movement of what's next, what
yeah,
evolves from that.
Good, thanks.
I did want to emphasize that because of the nature of this class, my intention is to make these, at least initially, relatively shorter exercises. You can touch base into, and hopefully it'll reveal something. I'm wondering if anybody had an experience that opened something else up, it might have stimulated something different, a different aspect of your experience, that was surprising or new or different or just was unexpected. Did anybody have an experience like that?
This was really quite surprising to me. First of all, when you talked about the exercise, I was afraid to do it, and that surprised me. I'm trying to get a feeling of safety by what I then saw was attempting to manipulate, to affect the external world, and suddenly I saw that what we're learning here, I can have a sense of safety inside myself. All of that, trying to reach out, I almost feel like, almost as if I reach out and sort of pat the outside world or try to mold it as if it's clay or something, and I'm very much paying attention to that. But if I felt safe inside, if I knew what steps to take, which I feel I'm learning, so that I don't get into that ricochet, you're the pinball in a pinball machine feeling, that the whole thing shifts. And so I just simply describe that to Panita, who then reflected back to me everything I had said. And then she said something about that you have this longing for a feeling of connection and appreciation, and it was exactly what I was trying to express. And sort of, so yeah, I mean, the whole thing is kind of surprising to me. I feel as if I'm working in a new element.
Wonderful. I'm so happy to hear that and appreciative. I want to reiterate part of it that you shared that I think is so important in this inner work and our sense to come to a sense of our inner strength and well-being, which is the part that I think is inherent to almost every, it's inherent to the protective structure itself, to the defensive structure itself, is that part of the protective and defensive structure is that it sees, this perspective sees the external world as dangerous or as a threat. So part of the function of that, in order to take care of the perceived threat, is it seeks emotional safety outside of itself. If only people will act a certain way, then it says, I will be okay. If only somebody acts, if they're nice, if they're conscious, if they're not angry, if they're not blaming, if only they act a certain way, and then I'll be nice so that they act that way. Then I'll be okay. Then I'll be safe. That kind of external emotional safety. And so my experience has convinced me that that's impossible. We'll never get emotional safety from manipulating, trying to act a certain way, whatever it is, that the only real safety, and I'm not even sure I would call it safety, is found within. That doesn't mean that there are no actual physical dangers out there. I'm not talking about physical safety. But the sense of my own internal well-being is not dependent on the behaviors of other people. This is such an important point that I think can only be experienced. And so even if you hear my words and you either intellectually agree or disagree with me, for me, what really informs this is for each person to come to their own experience of what is my own inner strength, inner confidence. Do I feel a wholeness or an inner okayness that's not dependent on the behavior of others? So that's what your sharing stimulates in me, and I'm really delighted to hear you share the experience of how it's bringing something, this experience, something, I guess, a different dimension. So thank you. I want to recommend that this be a part of the practice for everybody to apply on an ongoing basis. What I'd like to do is to bring your attention to another one of the handouts, and I'd like to walk through it with you. The one that's a diagram that has at the top titled Compassionately Embracing / Transforming Core Beliefs. This diagram is a way, as all diagrams are, all models, I think, is a way of, in a very rough or approximate way, but actually a very specific way, pointing out different aspects of our inner experience. This process, the diagram describes a kind of overall directionality or unfolding or evolution in the process of inner compassion that does transform and unfold the alienated thinking, the life-limiting core beliefs, etc. And I want to point out that in this inner compassion practice, I've identified that there's a line that goes through the middle horizontally. On the top of the line at the left-hand side, there's the dimension of our experience that I identify as meaningful, that it's cognitive or thought-centered, as thoughts around it that give meaning to our experience. And then underneath it, there's the felt energetic part of it. So for example, in any given experience, there's a part of it that we give meaning to our experience by being able to, for example, identify the stimulus. So let me just making reference to the example that was shared earlier, that the stimulus was he had an experience of people in his workspace saying things that he heard as blaming or criticizing. So that simple identification, you use language and thought to describe it. And underneath it, on the felt energetic level, he, in response to that, in the same dynamic, he felt a contraction, a constriction, what I call the hard edge. So there was anger. There may have been other feelings. So there is that with every experience, there's both meaningful level and then the felt energetic level. As we approach ourselves in our own experience, movement moves from the left-hand side of the diagram to the right-hand side. And we can move back and forth, but there's a general movement in that direction. So when we approach our own experience, and this is also true when we receive compassion or empathy from another person, so it can happen in an interaction. And as we move from left to right from the diagram, or more inwardly, we may identify some judgmental or jackal thinking. So on the meaningful level, his thoughts are telling himself, and I'm just going to make this up, he may find himself judging. So the thought says, these people are inconsiderate. I don't like it. this is wrong, or some other kind of shackle experience. And not necessarily corresponding to that underneath it. So he may still feel some contraction with that, some anger with that kind of shackle thinking. As you move towards the inner world, and as you empathize with that, there's going to be a relaxation of that hard edge. So he may empathize and may get in touch with, I'm feeling sad. The sadness is the softening of the anger. So there's a movement of hard edge to a softening and a relaxation of that. So this is all very general in terms of the direction of the movement. And there's less resistance, more of a softer, more of an allowing as one becomes aware of the underlying, more vulnerable feelings and needs. Movement from hard edge contraction to more relaxation, to more softness, more vulnerability. Then we move into the feelings and needs as we become more vulnerable, as I was describing. And the needs can be identified as, well, this is a need for connection or understanding. So that's the meaningful level as we attach meaning to it. But on the energetic level, we feel a given need as a felt movement that I call longing and yearning. So on the felt energetic level, we feel it in our bodies as a longing in our heart. On the cognitive level, we identify it as a need for connection, let's just say, for understanding, for cooperation. So the point I'm trying to make here is that our experience is going to have both at least those dimensions of the meaningful level, how we attach meaning to it, and then the energetic level, how we feel it in our sensations, in our bodies, in our emotions. So there's that general movement that goes inward, that becomes more open, more spacious, relaxed, I would say even more vulnerable. And in this place, when we are in touch with this part that's more vulnerable, perhaps scared, this is the place where there's often an inner dialogue with a young and innocent and hurt part of us. This is often present, and we'll spend more time with this during the next class where PowerPoint is titled Inner Wounding, colon, Zone of Vulnerability. We focus on the qualities of our deeper vulnerability, the innocence, the fragility, the tenderness, the yearning, that this is often represented by an aspect of our inner self that sometimes has the construct of our inner child, but it's an aspect of our inner experience that we can engage in an inner dialogue with. And so it's this part of it that will be the focus of our next class. I'm going to pause there because I wanted to just have this be sort of an introductory overview of this next stage of this inner compassion process. I would love, just as a closing, just to share your experience of this class. Anybody wants to share anything about how it worked for you, what you enjoyed about it, or even if there's something about it. And in addition to that, just as welcome, any part of this that did not meet your needs, that didn't work for you. So would anybody like to share this?
I just wanted to say how much I got out of this, in that I really connected to my need of belonging. And another need that I'd never fully, I think, identified with as strongly was a shared reality. And I'm just feeling how powerful that need is, and I don't ever connect to it so strongly as I did through the exercise, and it just gave me real food for thought of working on that need and really taking that need seriously. And the second thing that I wanted to say is that how much I reinvent a story, which isn't necessarily true, and I really got some clarity on that connected to both of those needs.
Wonderful. Thank you. I really appreciate hearing from you. What I really value in asking for feedback is I love to hear and connect with other people's voices. It is a form of connecting, and I do appreciate hearing your voices.
I just wanted to say one of the things that I got from that exercise was starting to have a feeling of how things might be different in interactions. I can't clearly see how I might have said something different or might have behaved different, but I'm just starting to get that feeling.
of the possibility is if I could have connected to what was really going on in that moment and stayed in a soft place instead of this feeling of abandoning myself into the persona. I'm feeling kind of encouraged by starting to get a feel for that.
Thank you. Very happy to hear that. Just stimulates inspiration and hope in me just hearing your sharing. And I love the phrase, abandoning myself into the persona. That so much fits my experience. I would further express in my own experiences, abandoning my authenticity, what's really true for me. I'm just going to make another comment in closing, is that so much of this work and so much of what I've heard people share is that this inner work for me is a kind of work from the inside out. So I found value in not so much working on increasing my skill of, well, what do I say in this situation? How would I say this? Not that there is not value in that kind of training and skill building. I think there is and there can be tremendous value and learning in that. I found so much deeper and more comprehensive and lasting value in a different question, which is, how can I connect, how can I be fully with my inner experience, with what is true, with what is authentic in me? How can I reverberate with that so that I can settle into and be with the fullness of this so that I can live from this place, so that I can communicate from this aspect of my aliveness, of what's truly authentic for me? It's a different, for me, a different approach. I want to live from the inside out. So I want to express my gratitude again for everyone who is present and listening on this class today. So thank you all for being here. We'll hear you next time. Bye-bye, everybody.